we are talking about valley. Of course, the dictionary defines valley in one way. It talks about a valley as a wide area drained by a large river. Well, that is the dictionary's definition. Of course, we have words that are figurative as well as words that are literal. And so most of the things that we'll be talking about today, I'm sure, would be a figurative valley. And as Brother mentioned, well, we do have valleys all in our lives. We know that a valley can be a noun that describes a place, and also it can be a thing that would describe a condition of our hearts and of our minds. And as he said, we do all have valleys from time to time that do crop up with us. When we think about the valleys too, sometimes, many times, valleys and hills are mentioned together. Talking about the hills and the valleys. And I guess that's very fitting, because sometimes we can be at the heights of the hills, and then sometimes we get low down in the valleys as well. So those are things which we can very much indicate that these things happen to us in our lives. When we think about the valleys, and just the word valley, come in. When we're at valley, there are a number of songs that have the theme of valley with them. We can think about the song that talks about the lily of the valley. And of course, the writer at that particular time talks about what Jesus means unto him. He says he's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. When we think about lilies, of course, that's a wonderful flower that we are able to see God in all the creation that we have. So certainly the one that wrote that song also gave us the words, "He'll never leave me nor forsake me." So whenever we're in a valley, we know that that is true, that he will not leave us. Of course, Romans tells us that there's nothing that can separate us from the love of God. Another song talks about the beautiful valley of Eden. And it talks there about the home of the pure and blessed. So that's the kind of valley that we want to be in, rather than the bad kind of valley that sometimes happens unto us. Also, there's a song that talks about Paradise Valley. And of course, that talks about the eternal heaven that we're looking for, that Paradise Valley, one that's much better than we have in here. Then there's a song also that talks about there will be a light in the valley. So there are a number of words, or a number of places that valley is mentioned in the scriptures that we can think about. There's also one that talks about come to the valley of the church in the Wildwood. And there, of course, emphasizes the church. So all of those things are important to us when we think about a valley. There's another song that talks about we're all going down the valley one by one. So we realize that this life is a temporary thing, that we just live in this tabernacle here. And I know the tabernacle is another name for a tent, and it does not last forever. And so that's what we are. We know Paul said at one time that it would be better for him to go and to be with God, but for the people that he was associated with, that was better that he remain. So we realize that this is a temporary valley, and of course the fact is that we said that we're strangers and we are pilgrims here in this life here. There are several interesting things in the scriptures about different valleys. I'd like for us to turn to the book of 1 Kings for just a moment. And 1 Kings, we'll be looking at chapter 20. And here's something interesting here, where he mentions the word valley, 1 Kings chapter 20. And let's see, we'll look at verse 28. It says, "And there came a man of God and spake unto the king of Israel and said, Thus saith the Lord, because the Syrians have said, The Lord is God of the hills, but he is not God of the valleys. Therefore will I deliver all this great multitude into thy hand, and ye shall know that I am the Lord." So that king was very mistaken. He said, "What? That you are, that God is not the God of the valleys." But we know that he is. I guess the Syrians thought they had the high ground, they had the hills, and they'd be able to defeat the people of Israel. But what? The Lord is the Lord of the valleys just as well. So we realize, too, that he is the all-wise creator. And so certainly, while he is the God of heaven and of earth, that all things are through him and in him, the scriptures do teach us. We had already been mentioned in the introduction here that we do all have valleys that are difficulties in our lives. And we have God's heroes, many of them in the scriptures, but we did have those times when they had a valley which of despair, I guess we might say. Of course, it quoted Psalms chapter 23, where David talked about the valley of the shadow of death. That certainly talks about a perilous time and danger. We know that he was a shepherd boy at one time, and that he must have gone in a lot of different places where there was a danger. And so the valley of the shadow of death, he perhaps was able to see crags overhanging the valley where he was, and didn't know whether there might be robbers or anything, what it might be, that would perhaps be a danger unto him. But let's think too that we talk about the valley of the shadow of death. You know, it takes a light in order to make shadow. And so he realized that the Lord was with him, his rod and his staff would comfort him. So when keep in mind when we might be in the shadow of some type of difficulty in the valley, that the Lord is the light of our life, and that he's the one that would be able to take care of us. The book of Psalms chapter 27 and verse 1 reads this way. It says here, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?" So David was one, of course, that had very great deal of trust in the Lord. Although he wasn't perfect, wasn't he? He was a human just like we are. Something I read or heard on the radio the other day was pretty good. It was talking about the fact that he had hills and he had valleys. One hill and one valley, and then again and again he had those things. And of course we didn't realize that too, but he was the man after God's own heart, because he repented of his evil, and then he was restored in the sight of God. Let's remember too that Peter, on his discourse on the day of Pentecost, to all those people there that had gathered together, he quoted David in one place, and he said, "I foresaw the Lord always before my face." So even when he was in the midst of his despair, why, he was able to see the Lord and realize that the Lord would be one that would help him. In the book of 2 Corinthians, we'll turn over there, and we'll notice some things about Paul himself. And he was one, of course, that had difficulties throughout his life, as we know, and actually it was predicted that this would occur unto him, that the Lord would show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake, he indicates. Listen, 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and beginning with verse 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 8. Keep in mind, we're thinking now here about valleys that are difficult and sometimes make us discouraged and all. And here's what Paul says. He says, "We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our body." That really shows what situation he had sometimes. What was it he said? He was troubled. He was perplexed. He was persecuted. He was cast down. So we can understand then that this was a time in his life when certainly he had to be one that persevered and that trusted in God, that God would deliver him. Let's go in the same book, 2 Corinthians, turn over to chapter 11 this time. We're talking about the things where he talked about being perplexed, about being cast down, this kind of thing. Let's notice what all happened unto him. You know, one place talks about our light affliction. Well, this particular place here, he showed us his afflictions were not very light, actually. He says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning with verse 24. Verse 23. "Are they ministers of Christ?" He speaks of others. "I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors, more abundant. In stripes, above measure. In prisons, more frequent. In deaths, often." Well, we haven't had to undergo that kind of thing ever. "Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, say one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the brethren, in perils of heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. beside those things which are without that which comes upon me daily, the care of all the churches. So we can see how it would be very discouraging, I guess we might say, to a lesser individual than Paul and the one that had less faith than Paul. But we remember he said in one place that all the things that he considered an advantage unto the Jew, he gave up in order that he might receive Christ. We also remember, of course, that he wrote over in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 4, how that he says there that he had fought a good fight, he had kept the faith, and therefore there was laid up for him a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, would give to him, and not to him only, but to all those that love his appearing. So even with all his difficulties, with those dark valleys of the shadow of death, he was one still that persevered, and he had fought a good fight. When we think of another great hero of the Lord, we need to turn to the Old Testament, to Job. I guess he is the paragon of patience, and when he had such difficulties as he did, as low a place in the valley as he was, about just as low, I think, as anyone can get. We'll turn to the book of Job. We won't, of course, read all of it, but some of it. Keep in mind, of course, that the sons of God came to rid themselves before God, and the devil came among them. God pointed to Job and indicated how righteous he was. And the devil argued with God, indicating the fact that you have already blessed him, so that's why he's such a faithful individual unto you. And we know that the devil, in effect, said, well, if you'll take away everything that he has, well, then he'll curse you. That's what he says in verse 11. Well, verse 10 says, hath not thou made a hedge about him and about his house, that all that he hath on every side, thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. So why not serve God if he's going to give you all those things? The devil comes back. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. I guess that's about as bad a thing that anybody can do, to curse somebody to their face. So we know that God permitted the devil to afflict Job. First of all, the scriptures indicate that he had blow after blow that came to him. First of all, he had the oxen and the asses and the servants that came and had been destroyed. The messenger came and told Job about that. Then fire came from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants. Then the Chaldeans came, and they carried away the camels and killed the servants. And then what we might call a tornado came and destroyed the house of where his elder brother had, and where his children were there, and destroyed all those. And just one individual was able to come back and to indicate to Job what had happened. We know in such a situation then, all those things that God had blessed him with were gone. Of course, Job could not understand why this was. Then to add to this ministry, if that wasn't enough, we know that he was struck with boils from the top of his head to the sole of his feet. And we remember that he was in such misery that his wife said, why don't you just curse God and die? Well, she was kind of on the side of the devil, I would think, for that moment, but I'm sure that she felt very sorry, and just as we would feel quite sorry if our mate was in such a condition as that, just pain day in and day out, and not knowing why these things would happen. So that was truly a valley of despair to him, and I don't guess we can realize how it could get any worse, but it did. He had three friends, we remember, and they came to console him, but what did they do? They didn't console him very much. It's something to have friends like this. They really began to accuse him of not being faithful unto God. So that shows that things could get even worse than they actually did. Turn to chapter 29, if you would, for a minute. In Job chapter 29, we find what a good individual Job was. He is just a paragon of virtue. He was a good example for us, and I don't guess we can even begin to be as upright and helpful an individual as he was. Job chapter 29, we'll just begin with verse 6. Says, when I washed my steps with butter, and the rock poured me out rivers of oil, then I went out to the gate to the city, when I prepared my seat in the street. Think about how rich he was. What was that? He talked about washed his steps with butter. and the rock poured out rivers of oil. So he was a rich individual prior to this, we know. Then it says, the young men saw me and hid themselves, and the aged rose and stood up. The princes refrained talking and laid their hands on their mouths. The nobles held their peace, and their tongues cleaved to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard me, then it blessed me, and when the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. Because I delivered the poor and the cried, the fatherless, and him that had come that had none to help him. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing with joy. What a wonderful individual that was. He was. If we could only begin to use him as that example. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind, and feet was I to the lame. I was a father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not, I searched out. And I break the jaws of the wicked, and pluck the spoil out of his teeth. Think about then all of those good things, the character that he was. That's in the 9th chapter. But then when we get to the 30th chapter, we see how the page is turned now. And he's not that way anymore. Those things are not with him now. Verse 30, chapter 30 says, but now they that are younger than I have me in derision. Before, they were even afraid to talk, remember, in his presence, because he was so wise, he was so rich, he was so powerful, he was so godly. But now the young are in derision to him, whose fathers I would have disdained to have set with the dogs in my flock. Yea, whereunto might the strength of his profit me, in whom old age was perished. For want and famine they were solitary, fleeing into the wilderness in former time, sought time, desolate and waste. We'll go on. I guess we won't read all of it, but now he says, and now I am their song. Yes, I am their byword. So they can say bad things about him now. So all I want us to notice in these things is how great he was to begin with, and now how low the circumstances are with him because of the devil being able to tempt him, and God, of course, having confidence in him that he would not curse him. But we realize, of course, we can read all this and see some of the things that Job mentioned about the things he did not understand. We remember that at one time he said he wanted to curse the day that he was born. But I want us to turn to chapter 42 of Job. And he says here, you see the end of this situation. Verse 12. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. For he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, and 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she asses. He had also 7 sons and 3 daughters. So in verse 15, in all the land were no women found so fair as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them inheritance among their brethren. After this, lived Job 140 years, and saw his sons and his sons' sons, even 4 generations. So that shows that one that certainly came out of the valley of the shadow of death. And it just shows how high he was to begin with and how low the devil did take him, only at the permission of God, for God was confident in him. And we see also that he was truly confident in God. And in the end, things worked out very well. The book of James chapter 5 and verse 11 reads this way. It says here, behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. And we certainly have seen that by the scriptures that we have here. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, it gives us here a number of individuals by name who I guess we might say were those that were also heroes of God. They were people that we turn to for a great example. Hebrews chapter 11, and it talks about people here, about Abraham, it talks about Moses, it talks about Joseph, and all sorts of individuals here. He talks about the walls of Jericho falling down, talks about Rahab and Gideon and so on, a great number of people that we know by name. But then we turn over to the last part here and we see what else happened to people that were truly in the valley of the shadow of death. Here it talks about here, and beginning with verse 33, it says, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quench the violence of fire, escape the edge of the sword. Out of weakness we're made strong, wax valiant in fight, turn to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover of bonds and imprisonments. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. So they had to undergo a lot of things then, did they not? We know, though, James tells us that the trying of our faith worketh patience. But let's think about these individuals and how badly they were tried, but yet it says that they remained faithful. Then it also mentions the fact, it says here, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. These all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. So that really makes us ashamed sometimes when the small trials that we have, and that we are not able perhaps sometimes to meet them head on maybe as we ought. Talking about the fact of speaking of these valleys, we know there is a song that talks about we are going down the valley one by one, of course, toward the setting sun. And so we do all know that life here is a temporary thing, and that, as we mentioned earlier, we're just living a temporary temple here, and that we need to be prepared, for we don't know when our life might be taken away from us. Let's switch gears for just a little bit now. We talked about a place of difficulty, temptation, trials, and persecutions, and being able to overcome these type things. But let's now also notice that a valley can be a place of rest and of peace and of beauty. On a hot day, we can imagine after perhaps we've been climbing in the mountains and our muscles are rather sore and all, and we're awfully tired, how good it is to go into a valley where there's a cool stream perhaps and a lot of shade. And that's the type of contentment that sometimes we can have if we have the right attitude about the valley that we're in. It's easy to imagine David reflecting of God upon such circumstances. He talks about the Lord's being everywhere and being able to be seen in everything. Let's go to the book of Psalms, chapter 139. And he talks here about God being everywhere. So when we come to this valley of peace and comfort, we can realize that truly God is there. Psalms, chapter 139, he talks about the places that he sought God and found God everywhere. Psalms 139, O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, and whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I take my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. And he goes on about these types of things. If we skip on down to verse 15, which is one of my favorite. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned when as yet there was none of them. And we're talking about DNA and RNA and genes and these kinds of things today. Well, of course, God was the one that was the maker of all these kinds of things to start with. There's another song that I like that doesn't really have too much to do with this, except a little bit in this connection, where it talks about God holds the germ of life in his hand. And of course, David realized that too when he wrote what he did at this particular place. Valleys are used to describe several different things, as we noticed. And I want us to turn to the book of 2 Chronicles for just a moment here. And we noticed several things right here. Second Chronicles tell us about what the kings and all did. Second Chronicles chapter 20. And let's see, we'll be looking at verse 26, I think it is. It says, on the fourth day, they assembled themselves in the valley of Berachah, for there they blessed the Lord. Therefore, the name of the same place was called the valley of Berachah unto this day. There they blessed the Lord. So this was the valley of blessings. So not only can valleys be those that are distressful, but yet we can have valleys of blessing just as well. This was in the days of Jehoshaphat when God defeated his enemies, Judah, and there was so much spoil, it said that it took 3 days for them to gather everything they had together. So certainly we can understand why they call that a valley of blessing. In the book of Joel, chapter 3, which I know we'll have to miss just a minute, Joel chapter 3, he talks here about a valley of decision. And of course, that's something which we are have to cross as well sometimes. Joel chapter 3 and verse 14. He says, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. And that happened to many individuals and happens to us every day, of course. We remember that Joshua is one that said, choose you this day whom you will serve. So he gave them that time to make a decision that they had to decide whether they were going to go back to Egypt and serve those gods or whether they were going to serve the true God. We make decisions daily, and Joshua made the right one. Many people today don't make the right decision, do we? We know that there's STDs. We know there's AIDS. We know that there's drugs, homosexuality, murders, abortions, all types of things like this. And many bad decisions are made. All we have to do is turn over to the book of 2 Timothy, where it talks about the things that will be in the last days, and we can see how that all of these, 2 Timothy chapter 3, and see how many people have made such bad decisions. It talks here, verse 2, chapter 3. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. People have to make conscious decisions to live this way, don't they? Without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, hating, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. Then all we have to do too is turn over to the book of Romans chapter 1, and I wish some of the churches these days that are so anxious to have same-sex marriage and have individuals that are gay to be officials in their church in high offices, wish they'd turn and read here what it says about homosexuality and this type of thing. We won't read it all. I'm sure that you're familiar with it, but it just talks about here in verse 28. That's Romans chapter 1, verse 28. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, deceit, debate, malignity, whispers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without natural understanding, covenant breakers, without implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death. So people know what they're doing when they're doing those kinds of things. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. So if we approve of such as that, as many times as things people are doing these days, well, it's just as bad as if we were doing those things ourselves. We could also turn to the book of Revelations 21:8 that gives a catalog. I won't read this, we're all familiar with it, talking about murders and adulterers and this kind of thing. But all just another place where it talks about these things that people make a very bad decision. Valley of decision, and many times people don't make the right ones as they ought to. We might remember that 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 2 talks about now is the day of salvation. So those decisions come day by day to us. We remember that Ananias and Sapphira made a bad decision. They tried to appear more righteous than they were. Paul made the right decision, we know, when he saw the Lord on the road to Damascus, when he believed it, and then he became a Christian. And where he was supposed to go and bring back people bound unto Jerusalem, he began to preach in the name of Jesus there at Damascus. So he made the right decision. So when decisions come to us day by day, let us make sure that we make the right decision. We know the Lord indicated the fact that when someone asked him about the commandments, he said to love the Lord, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second commandment was likened to it. It says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Guess I'll conclude now with a few words from another song. It says here, don't forget that in the valley there is someone needing you. And of course, let's see if we might possibly be able to help others. Those are disciples were those that were commanded to go and preach the gospel to every creature. And so let us do what we can in order that we might spread God's word and truth, that we might be able to obey and keep his commandments. Thank you.